You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
And I'm Jonathan Capehart, sitting in for Leonard Lopate. When it was issued in 1856, the tiny red stamp cost a penny. In 2014, that tiny red stamp sold at Sotheby's for nearly $9.5 million, the largest amount ever paid for a postage stamp at auction. In his new book, The 1 Cent Magenta, Inside the Quest to Own the Most Valuable Stamp in the World, James Barron tells the story of the eccentric characters who have bought it, who have bought, owned, and sold the stamp through the years. The 1 Cent Magenta is published by Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill, and I'm pleased it brings James Barron to the show today. Welcome.
Good to be here.
Before we get into this specific stamp, what was the allure of stamp collecting in the 19th century?
Oh, it was the new fad. It was the hot thing because this was high tech. The Industrial Revolution was catching on. Printing presses were high tech. Printing presses in London and places like major cities like London and New York, printing presses that could turn out thousands and thousands of pages of stamps. Stamps were new. Stamps were trendy. Stamps were chic. And in a place like British Guiana, where this stamp came from, that was really something. It was even more than in an urban center to have stamps, because stamps tied the world together. They were kind of like the internet in the sense that the internet is just a transmission system. Mm-hmm. Stamps made communication possible. They tied things together. You could send a letter. It would take time, and it would get there. It would get to places you couldn't imagine, or that you in your lifetime couldn't possibly go, that we couldn't have gone to until the jet age came along. Mm-hmm. And that was the lure of it. And so with industrialization, with the Industrial Revolution, it was something that people wanted to do. It was something that they were fascinated by and couldn't get enough of.
Mm-hmm. So just so that I'm clear, it's not that, you know, mail and things like that came along because of stamps. Stamps were, let me put the question this way. When people sent letters, before stamps, how did they get from point A to point B?
Private messengers sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the recipient had to pay. If I sent you a letter, you'd have to pay for my letter. And in England, that gave rise to people trying to beat the system. I could write a code on the envelope, and you could tell from the code what I was going to tell you. If I had a store, let's say, and you were buying me eggs or meat or something in New York, and I was out in Long Island, I could send you a letter, and from the way I put my return address on the envelope, you could tell that I needed 5 pounds of meat, 5 pounds of beef, and 6 dozen eggs, let's say. I had some coded system that you could tell, and there'd be nothing inside. There's a famous story about somebody going and being offended that the postman made an old lady pay, and it was a letter from her son, and he paid it, and she opened it. There was nothing inside. She had looked at the letter. She knew it was just the kind of thing you say to your mother. Hi, Mom, I'm fine. She could tell that from what was on the front of the letter.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way he had addressed it, nothing more. There was nothing inside.
And so so then this letter arrives that she's supposed to pay for. She sees it, and then what does she say to the person who brought it? I don't want it?
Well, that's what she tried to say to the postman.
So that's what you would say to the postman, I don't want it.
And that's what
that's
people tried to do.
That's how you're gaming the system.
That's right. And this was a big thing. And so with Sir Rowland Hill, who's credited with inventing postage stamps, although the idea was kind of out there, that changed everything. I would now have to pay for the stamps along with my 5 pounds of beef and 6 dozen eggs that you would send me.
Right, right. So what drew you to the subject of stamp collecting?
I went to a cocktail party.
It always starts at a cocktail party.
It's New York, of course. Right. It does. And at that cocktail party, I got there early, and there was only one person. There weren't many people there, and there was only one person in the room whom I recognized, and that was David Redden. He was an auctioneer at Sotheby's, I'd written about him before for the New York Times, and I'd written about him when he sold the Declaration of Independence. He sold one copy twice. He'd sold the Magna Carta. He'd sold the Book of Psalms, the first oldest and oldest book published in the U.S. colonies. And he'd sold one of the pianos from Casablanca. There were two. And he sold one of them for just over $600,000. He's the only person I recognize. I walk over to him and, you know, I'm a reporter, so I say, in effect, David, what have you done for me lately? Although what I actually said was, what are you up to now? Because he's always up to something, mm-hmm. and it's always a good story. And what he said was, I'm going to sell the world's most expensive stamp, or it will be after I sell it in a few weeks, but there's a problem. There's some people in London, and I want them to authenticate it, he said, but they may want to dip it in benzene. Dunk, poof, no more stamp.
Right.
Benzene's a volatile chemical, and he wanted to sell this for nearly $10 million. Well, if you dunk it in the benzene and it just vaporizes, what then? I thought, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I want to be there when they do that. He said, they're going to do it next week. I said, I'm on vacation next week, but if they insist on it, if you can't talk them out of it, because he said he was trying, there mm-hmm. were negotiations, he said. I said, if you can't talk them out of it, call me, I'll be on the next plane. Well, he didn't call. They authenticated it. It turned out stamp people rarely use benzene anymore. They use something less volatile called heptane if they have to, but they have the same kind of forensic equipment that we know from NCIS or mm-hmm. any of the crime shows, that they can look at stamps, get an up-close, microscopic kind of view. The committee of the Royal Philatelic Society, that's the Supreme Court of Stamps, and that's who he went before.
Who knew there was a Supreme Court of Stamps? Wow. Go on. Sorry.
Stamp people know. Stamp people know this, and especially in Britain, it's revered and respected, and I came to see with good reason as I worked on the book about the one cent mm-hmm. magenta. They authenticated it. They gave him a certificate. And he came back. He called me a couple of weeks later saying that all went well, but now he was off to Washington to the National Postal Museum, run by the Smithsonian. They have the same kind of equipment, so I tagged along there,
mm-hmm.
and that was the beginning of it. And at one point, he all but body blocked the Smithsonian guy, Tom Lehrer, who wanted to put the stamp in a thing that looked kind of like one of those embossing devices.
Right.
David Redden was so worried about that device that it would leave a mark on the stamp, even a teeny tiny mark, that as I say, he all but body blocked Tom, and the stamp didn't go into that one. But they looked at it in the others that everyone agreed were non-destructive. Tom said that one would be too. And ascertained essentially the same thing. The stamp was the real thing.
The stamp is the real thing. And so it goes on auction. Before we talk about it going on auction, it had four owners?
Well, it had nine over time.
Nine over time.
Plus the government of France, if you want to count them.
Well, of course. Okay. So, yes. So the government of France counts. But it had a couple of very interesting owners, or at least people who came into contact with it. One, I'm going to get the order wrong. No, I'm going to get it right. First, Louis Vernon Vaughan.
Yes.
Who is Louis Vernon Vaughan?
He was then a 12-year-old boy. Now, everybody who's ever collected stamps as a kid.
I tried.
I did too, for about a year and a half. How old were you?
I was probably about the same age as Louis Vernon Vaughan, but yeah. I did not stick with it.
And part of it is neither of us, right? Neither
right.
of us found the nirvana. Neither of us found a stamp important enough or interesting enough to make us stay with it, right?
Right.
Because I certainly didn't. Well, Louis Vaughan, he had the 1 cent magenta. He found it. But he didn't realize it.
Where did he find it?
He found it in some papers at his uncle's house in British Guiana. The uncle moved to Barbados, And Louis Vuitton was sent over to help clean out the house. And he was into this new fad of stamp collecting. Mm-hmm. This was in about 1873. There's some junk around the house, and in the junk there are letters and papers, and they have stamps on them. Louis Vuitton thinks, oh great, I can take these home for my collection. And one of them was the 1 cent magenta. He takes it home. He doesn't think much of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a particularly pretty stamp. I mean, you're not going to fall in love with this stamp for its looks.
Uh-huh.
People call it the Mona Lisa of stamps, but that's not why.
Well, it was a provisional stamp?
Yes, and that's part of the story. That's part of the mystery of it, because mm-hmm. the records are scarce. A provisional stamp is one that was issued there. The British Guiana was a British colony. Their stamps were printed in London, but at some point in late 1855, the postmaster got worried. He was running low on stamps, and he'd ordered 100,000, and somebody left a zero off, and only maybe 5 or 10,000 arrived, far fewer than he thought he needed to meet the demand. So he went to the local newspaper and said, maybe not in these words, help. And the local newspaper printed several hundred stamps. Mm-hmm. And one of the mysteries of this is, why only one? If they printed 500 of them, why did only one survive?
Yeah.
And I don't have any better answer for that than it did. And that's one of the things about this story, because over time, as it increases in value until you get to the auction in 2014, you're putting this bet on a $9.5 billion bet on the idea that it is what everyone thinks it is.
Right.
And that's why the Supreme Court of Stamps was so important.
The Supreme Court of Stamps. I love it. I can't believe we are almost out of time, but there are a couple of things. Well, John E. DuPont is someone else who came in contact with this stamp, and we all know who he is. Steve Carell portrayed him in the movie Foxcatcher in 2014, the year that the 1 cent magenta was auctioned. But I can't let you go without asking you, what creates the value of something like this stamp?
Yes.
How do you go from 1 cent to $9.5 million?
There is an aura, and part of that is who had it. After Louis Vernon Vaughan, it changed hands a couple of times and got into the collection of a guy named Ferrari. I'm not going to try to pronounce his first three or four names. He had the peerless collection. He lived in Paris. He lived in a palace. That palace is now the official residence of the Prime Minister of France. When his father died, they found bonds inside, or gold shares, that were redeemable for huge amounts of money. His father had helped finance the Suez Canal.
Mm-hmm.
This is who owned it. And the fact that it went into Ferrari's collection suddenly made it something. And part of it is, at that point, it had the say-so of two of the early gods of stamp collecting. One of them was a man named E.L. Pemberton. He was so excited when he found out about this stamp that he wrote a letter in which he said, it's genuine, and he put exclamation points at the end of the sentence that he said that in. Well, when E.L. Pemberton talked, stamp people listened.
Mm-hmm. And the current owner now is Stuart Weitzman?
The shoe designer.
Yeah. So is he the person who paid the $9.5 million?
Yes, he is.
For this stamp.
He is indeed.
And at what point is there like a certain amount of time before, say, someone like Stuart Weitzman, someone who has just purchased something at auction, can just like turn around and sell it again? What would the Supreme Court of Stamps say about that?
They'd probably say, if that's what you want to do, do it. Although he has said he doesn't mean to do that, and it's on display at the Postal Museum in Washington.
In Washington, D.C., which is, if you memory serves, it's right across the street from Union Station.
If you can get out of Penn Station this summer, when you get to Washington, just walk right across the street.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, in today for Leonard Lopate. I've been speaking with James Barron about his latest book, The 1 Cent Magenta, Inside the Quest to Own the Most Valuable Stamp in the World. James, thank you very much for coming on today.
Thank you very much.